This is November 24th, 1997. Hank and I are sitting in my dining room at 922 Shoto in Helena. The interview is with Hank Mathiasen. My name is Dave Walter, and we're doing this interview in behalf of Ivan Doig, a sometimes Montana author who's run away to Seattle. Hank, why don't we start with your background?
All right. First, I was born at Plentywood, Montana, in the third house on the east side of the track.
And it's still there.
It's still there, or it was the last time I was there. I grew up and attended schools, I grew up in the country, but I attended school at a little town called Outlook. For 10 years, and I thought I was smarter than the teachers and decided to get out in the world. Been on my own ever since, although later on I did complete my high school by a GED, and I actually did take a few college courses, but it was a long way around. Well, I was growing up, it's a farming ranching community. It's more farming now than it was then. There were some fair-sized ranches, and there's still a couple. A lot more farming up there now. My work experience, I've done a little bit of everything, and I'm not really trying to brag or anything like that, but after I left home, I worked on dairy farms for a while. I worked on ranches, well, one dairy farm. Then I decided there was easier ways to make a living than face a bunch of magpie cows every morning at 4 a.m. I drove truck part-time for about 3 years. Spent a couple of winters working on oil rigs. When I turned 21, I went in the Air Force for 4 years. Apparently they saw more than I did, because the first thing they did was they sent me to Intelligence Operations School, and I graduated from there as an Intelligence Operations Specialist. So that put in, basically I spent 2 years going to school, and then I went to Europe for 2 years. And I came back, went back on working on a ranch there for a couple of months, starting a couple of colts and doing some calving, and went to work for the Department of Livestock.
What year was that? When was that?
1966, when I started for the department. At that time, when you hired on to the department, everybody was hired on for 6 months only. It wasn't really a probation period. They just said, you're hired for 6 months and you're going to get laid off. They usually hired you around the 1st of July, 1st of July, 1st of August, so at the end of the year you were going to be out of a job. And they said if you liked the job and you wanted to get back on, well, you could make application again next year, and if they hired you back, well, after 2 or 3 years of this, you may get on steady. What happened in my case was, when I started out in Billings, working both yards in Billings, they were the two largest yards in the state at that time, and Sydney was third largest as far as numbers of cattle, you start working with an older, experienced guy, and you just learn from ground up. Well, I was only there a couple of months, and they transferred me to Lewistown, and I was up there, and when the end of the year came and I thought I was going to be getting laid off, well, instead of doing that, they transferred me back to Billings. So I was in Billings and I kept thinking, well, I'm going to get laid off, and they said, well, no, we're going to keep you on for a while longer. And then 1st of June, they transferred me to Bozeman on a temporary deal, and this was kind of an unusual situation because they commissioned me at that time, which gave me law enforcement powers. And the norm for that time period was you'd have to work for the department at least 7 or 8 years before you'd ever reach that stage. Mm-hmm. Although it was only a temporary assignment, I went to Bozeman for a couple of months and worked the yards there and did a little country work for them. And then they transferred me back to Billings. I never did get laid off. I was back in Billings, and that fall they said, well, gee, we need somebody in Butte, so they sent me to Butte. And so then I worked Butte for, that'd be the fall of 67, 68, and things slowed down in Butte. They transferred me back to Billings. So now, so I worked in Billings, and then in 69, they asked me if I wanted to go to the academy. But, or not really if I wanted. They says, you want to go to the academy, you're going. And so I went, that was in, well, it must have been in May, I think, April or May of 69. I went to the academy, which was on the campus at MSU in Bozeman. All of our classrooms were in the student union building. And we stayed in the dorms. After that, I was back in Billings, and then they commissioned me on a full-time basis. Received my badge the second time. And I didn't do any moving around after that. I was just pretty much in Billings, and then they promoted me to first assistant at the North Yards, or what Billings Livestock Commission Company. And then one day, this was in August of 1970, Bill Cheney, who was the executive officer of the department, came down. And wanted to know if I'd move to Helena. He says, we're only going to move you up there for a year or so, because 1971 was the re-record year. Help us out through the re-record, and then we'll transfer you out. Well, he said, load up the wife and come up and look the town over. So it was about the 25th or so of August. So we did come to Helena, and we made a little tour, looked around, stopped in the office. And they asked us what we thought of Helena. Well, not too bad. And they said, well, good. We can work up here the 1st of September. It'd give you a lot of time to think about it. So we moved to Helena. And at that time, I got another raised promotion. They assigned me to as a district investigator assigned to the Helena office. And that first fall, see, the re-record didn't start until 1971. So for the fall of 70, I traveled pretty much the western half of the state. Missoula, Kalispell, Victor, Great Falls, a time or two, Butte. Helping out wherever they needed help. Spent my time there. Then the first of the year when the re-record started, well then I was kind of stuck in the office there temporarily, and till the summertime they sent me to the major case school at the academy, which covers the investigations, but you go a little more in depth. The first school that I went to in 69, it's kind of like an introduction to law enforcement. They give you the basics, because they assumed that your department was going to continue your training when you went back. Although they did not really have a training program in place. What your training was you would ride along with a veteran inspector when he was doing some things if he wasn't too doggone busy and was willing to put up with you. I kind of lucked out when I was down there in Billings. There was a veteran inspector by the name of Howard Parker. that he knew that bighorn country real well. And one night, him and I had, or one afternoon it was, him and I met down there in Hardin. He hauled me around the country and showed me where Stan Lyon grew up. Mm-hmm. We went out to the Antler Ranch and a few different places. Had some pretty good trips with Old Howard. But that's how you...
Like an apprenticeship.
Yeah, you serve your apprenticeship that way, and you listen to all the tales that he had to tell.
Yeah.
But then I attended the Major Case School, which is supposed to kind of fine-tune your investigative ability. They go pretty in-depth into crime scene searches, things like that. But then the re-record was over finished up probably in March or so of 1972, and I kept thinking, well, I'm going to get transferred out of here. Well, there wasn't any transfers coming, so we just sat tight. Well, in the meantime, we moved out of Helena and got out in the Clancy area because the town was ready to drive us all nuts. Moved out onto the March Ranch out there and stayed there, and it was a little later on there, they sent me to, in 72, they sent me to police management school, which puts you into a little higher echelon. You're supposed to be able to manage other people, although most of our investigators work as individuals. But what we do supervise are local inspectors. Person doesn't want to get local inspectors confused with our district men, because a lot of our local inspectors are kind of like the policemen on the beat. These are guys that they are not law enforcement, but they do most of the inspecting of the cattle and the horses, the livestock that's moving. And if something is going wrong out there, they're probably going to be the first ones to notice it. And so as a district investigator, and a district will normally encompass anywhere from 2 to 5 counties, depending on where you're at in the state, you have to stay in contact with these guys on a fairly regular basis.
So a local guy's working just within a county or a town?
Yeah. Yeah, most of those guys will work, I'll give you an example here. At that time, the sheriff's office maintained a deputy inspector here in Helena. They had one deputy that was assigned to do nothing but livestock stuff for the sheriff's office. And then there was another local inspector at Wolf Creek. There was one at Craig.
And they're paid for by the Department of Livestock
or by the
sheriff's office?
The one deputy was paid for by the sheriff's office. Mm. And what they do, well, I'm going to regress here a little bit. In the old days, these local inspectors were hired only for a certain period of time. They'd hire them through the busy season. Mm. When you go way back, there's been an awful lot of changes in the marketing of livestock. Up until 1930s, 1940s, just about all of your marketing took place between August and the end of December or Christmas. That was the shipping season. Mm-hmm. You didn't have any shipments after that, or so very, very, very few. We didn't have livestock markets as such in a state like the Great Falls Market and those until in the late 1930s. Hmm. And then that created some changes in the makeup of the department.
So there really was a busy season and a down season.
Oh yes. So. And even now we do have a busy season and a down season. But the down season is not as down as it used to be. If you take will, all of the cattle in the state as a whole, 50% of them will be marketed in 3 months of the year.
Now.
Now. Mm-hmm. October, November, December. Mm-hmm. 50% of all the cattle that are going to go to market will go to market in those 3 months. And the other 50% move in the other 9 months. Mm-hmm.
So you don't, so you've got something going on all the time.
All the time. Because in the early days, you didn't sell calves. You very seldom sold yearlings. Most of the stuff that a rancher would sell was at least two-year-old, but normally there were 3-, 4-, and 5-year-old steers. Threes and fours, mostly. Big old steers weighing 1,400 pounds off the grass. Which steers nowadays don't hit that coming up out of a feedlot, because they'd be a little, they're a little tastier, but they're a little tougher. Your district investigator, going back here, he keeps in contact with all of his local inspectors, see what's going on, and he will, if there's anybody under suspicion, or if they think, you know, the district man will go along and he'll help the local inspector work, you know, a particular bunch of cattle, or 3 or 4 bunches, just to see what shows up in them, because there is such a thing as an honest stray. If you got two ranchers running in close proximity, 4-wire barbed wire fence between them, there's always animals that are going to get across from one way, one side to another, and you work this rancher's cattle here, and you might pick up one or two that belong to this guy. And that's just part of a normal operation. But if you wind up with an extraordinary number, or maybe this guy's cow comes in and the calf following has got somebody else's brand on, then it's a different story. But
so a lot of those local guys are paid for by Department of Livestock.
Yes, what we do with them now, here's the arrangements that we have. In the old days, they would hire them like for 3 or 4 months. Mm-hmm. Well, this worked out good in some areas. In other areas, they were paying a guy some pretty high wages for working very few cattle. So the arrangement to make now, under the laws which actually went into effect in 1939, where they can charge the rancher a fee for inspecting livestock. It started out at 10 cents a head, and I think it's up to 2 bits now. Inflation is out to us. The fees that the local inspector collects are his to keep. That's his pay. Some of these guys, they do pretty good for a month or two in the fall. There isn't any of them that get rich at it. But, you know, for a couple of months in the fall, he might make a couple of $1,000. Which to some of these guys,
makes a difference.
It makes a difference. And, we always have a problem trying to get good guys to take the job, because the guys that would do the job real good are usually busy enough at other things. They don't want to break into a busy day to, because along with the good bunches where you can work and maybe collect $100 in a day, there's 50, these deals where you got to quit your work and you go over here and you do $5 worth. You know, it takes you 2 hours and you collect $5. And plus, you spent $3 on gas getting there.
So the expenses for the local guy are out of pocket.
No, they're out of pocket. Although I do believe there's been a change where that local guy can now collect mileage if he has to. So it helps. So in my own career, after that, I wound up... They assigned me, I was district man assigned to the Helena office until actually 1975. Instead of just being an investigator at large, they assigned me a district around here. I had southern half of Lewis and Clark County and Jefferson and Powell County, Granite County, and didn't include Broadwater at that time. I was there for probably a year, a little better, and then they had an opening. They stuck me back in the office, made a compliance officer out of me. So I got to check up on everybody else's work and make sure they were doing it right. Things weren't right. We did what we could to get things squared away. And I stayed in that position until 1987, and then I transferred to the Animal Health Division as supervisor in charge of the import-export section, which controls imports and exports of live animals into out of Montana. Mm-hmm. As far as the health of the animals is concerned, we were more concerned with disease control versus ownership, but with the ownership background, you work on the whole works. We're very tied into one thing. And retired in 93 because I wanted to do something different for a change. Just wanted to be my own boss for a while, basically what it amounts to. So that pretty well covers my background. We probably should get into the recording. Back where we started. Okay. We'll start with the recording brands. Okay. And this goes... I'll start with 1912. I won't go back prior to 1912. That's when they first started the re-record period. The law was passed that every 10 years, it started with 1911, and then they designated like 1921, 1931, 1941, so on and so forth, as the year that all brands had to be re-recorded or you lost your right to that particular brand. In order to apply for a brand, an individual has to make up a combination of letters or whatever design, whatever they desire, and normally three different combinations, and they would send it into the Helena office, or if it was convenient for them, you could go right into the office. And they would check all of these brands for conflicts with brands on record. They would look real close at any other brands that might be in your immediate neighborhood. They have changed, there's been some policy changes on this. It used to be that if the brand conflict was far enough away, such as, we'll just say, between Forsyth and Kalispell, that the conflict was far enough away, and they thought, well, there's no chance of these cattle ever commingling or getting together, they would go ahead and record it, even though it did conflict. Mm-hmm. But over the years, where cattle, ranchers started moving cattle around a lot more for summer pasture, people started marketing. I know of instances where people from Kalispell would haul their cattle all the way to Billings to market. Mm-hmm. They would bypass the Kalispell market, they'd bypass Great Falls, or if they went the other way, they'd be bypassing Missoula, they'd be bypassing Butte, Bozeman, go all the way to Billings just to market their cattle. Well, when that started taking place, they said, we can't look at it this way anymore. We're going to have to look totally statewide for any conflicts. And it's been a long row, and there are still some conflicts on record, but they're gradually weeding them out.
When you say conflict, are you talking about things that are similar but different, or things that are exactly the same?
They can be similar. I'll give you... I've got a piece of scratch paper here or something. Things that, or letters that look like on paper that they wouldn't conflict, actually conflict after you burn them on the cow.
Mm.
H's and N's.
Mm.
Depending on how they are branded. An N, because you have a sharp corner here and a sharp corner here, they can actually blotch across and almost look like an H on a cow.
Hmm.
Sixes and reverse J's.
Okay.
They look good on paper, but when you put them on the cow, there's no difference at all.
Yeah.
Your H's and your N's, your A, and what we call a walking Y. Now, sometimes that A will blotch out. A lot of this just depends on how the iron is made, how large the iron is. But this will blotch, and it will pull together, and you'll get a little old dot in the middle, and that'll be the only difference between an A and a walking Y.
Mm.
And that little old scar in the middle. The other thing that comes into play is not only the letters, but the position on the animal. It has to be on the same position. And then we also look at the exact opposite position, left rib and right rib, for instance, because one of the things we run into is people are branding and they get in a rush, and here a calf gets flopped on the wrong side, and they just stamp iron that rascal, and hey, when he comes to town that fall, he's got somebody else's brand on. Give you a pretty good idea of a conflict. Now this is up in my home country, up in northeastern corner of the state. We got two different families, and they've had these brands for years, and neither one of them will let go. And at one time, all there was between them was a barbed wire fence. One of them, old boy B, the other one is a schoolboy 4-bar 8. Same position.
Wow.
When they get haired up in the fall of the year, you just about have to clip every cotton-picking animal to tell the difference.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting. Yeah. Using this same token, you know, there is a very interesting case going back into the early 60s where a guy actually, well, he didn't get the brand through the state. They kind of got onto him because he was trying to record brands that were very similar. And you're probably familiar with the Bruce Johnson case. And what he did, of course, we had Rankin's written E-bar-Y.
Mm-hmm.
And he tried to get various brands recorded that he could cover this brand up with. Well, we couldn't actually record him one because of the conflict. Well, what he did is he went, there was the backward V bar K was recorded to a lady way down in the eastern part of the state. See, in this place, this case took place up on a Chinook. And he bought her brand, which was the reverse V bar K, which we have no control over. She sells it to him, he buys it, he's the legal owner of it. So we knew what he was going to be doing with it, and he did. He did. Now, of course, most cases aren't quite that blatant, but they do work. And as far as I know, there is not a brand on record that if somebody is artistic enough and has enough patience, that they can't change it. They can always change it into something somewhere along the line. Work on no brands. And it's surprising how many people do not brand their cattle. Hmm.
Is it because they don't have registered brands? Or because they're too lazy?
I say it's because they're too lazy. So. one of our cases, well, that took place in the early 70s. Was a ranch manager for an absentee owner. He wound up stealing some cattle, actually off the ranch from the owner. But he had control of it, and he just, when spring roundup came, he made certain that there was so many of them that did not get branded. And he later sorted and siphoned these off for his own use. He was a good ranch manager. But it's one of those things. And we did have a case, I worked on this part-time, I was still working in Billings at the time, what involved a bunch of no-brand cattle, and these two little old ladies owned the cattle, and I don't know all of the circumstances, whether they couldn't hire anybody to help them or wouldn't hire anybody to help them. But they had quite a menagerie down there, and they had a neighbor that was found it easy pickings because he had a place right up next to him, and he also had a place. See, they were living in Sweetgrass County, and this same guy also had a place down in Bighorn County. This is where one of the cases where we used the silver dimes. Late 60s, yeah. We managed, the bank down there managed to have a roll of dimes left over, and we went, marked a whole bunch of her cattle and took pictures of them at that time, face markings and stuff like that, because she had a real rainbow herd, you know. There was a little bit of everything as far as colors and color combinations. And this individual, he was noted for moving cattle back and forth, and a lot of people do move cattle back and forth in the course of the normal ranching operations. And he'd get a local inspector up there to inspect a bunch of these cattle to go to his other ranch, and oh yeah, that cow, we forgot to get her branded, and just as a calf, and we never did get her branded, and whatever the case may be, and we went to work on them, and they found a bunch of them cows down on this guy's ranch in Bighorn, and also found the dimes, and, yeah, with the mint stamp and the dates and everything, and pretty good evidence. Stood up in court. Yeah. And nowadays, we use electronic implants. Mm. They're actually, they're better than the dimes. The dimes you'd insert in the brisket. Just make a little incision and two stitches and close it back up. You just go under the hide. You don't go into the meat. You just go under the hide. Once in a while, you'll lose a dime because it'll gravitate along under the hide. it's an old method. It works, but with the electronic ID that they have now, you can insert that little old thing and you can put it in a number of places on the animal.
Well, when does a rancher call a local inspector?
Okay, the law requires that cattle be inspected or horses anytime there's a change of ownership. If he's selling two or three of them to his neighbor across the fence, or if they're going to be moved out of the county, mainly it's county line.
And then he'll call the local inspector and set up a time.
Set up a time and a place, and the local inspector will come out and inspect him. Or the district man, you know. There are some ranchers that prefer that the district man come and inspect him. For what reason, I don't know. It's maybe they've known this district man for a long time. Maybe the way he works cattle just fits into their operation a little bit. Because it seems like everybody handles cattle a little differently.
What does the inspector do when he shows up that day?
All right. Rancher will normally have all of his cattle in the corral. Normally. I've showed up some places.
Not always.
I've showed up some places. They said, well, be there at 8 o'clock. Well, at 8 o'clock, they were still sitting in the house drinking coffee and haven't saddled their horse yet. But as a rule, that doesn't happen too often. Normally, if it's somebody's cattle that you've worked in the past, you already know what his brand is and where it's located on the animal. And you will work the cattle normally in an alley. You'll get them strung out where they're coming down past you. If the brand is on the left rib, you get them coming down on your left, and you can watch every animal as it goes by. And you also tally the animals, like you'll have so many cows. You'll put a C for cows, and you'll make a tally mark for every cow that goes by you. And we use an X for calves, S for steers, and an H for heifer, and B for bull. And you'll work that out. You use a book just like this. That's just got the dog. But you'll start out, and you'll usually have the date up here, and you'll write in the guy's name and where you're at, you know, Rainsford Corrals or wherever the case may be. A lot of times, you may even count the entire herd first. You know, whatever you're going to inspect. If the guy's got 50, 60 head moving, or maybe he's got calves, he's going to load a semi out, which might take up to 110. You may count the whole bunch first, making sure so that when you count up your tally marks at the end, you want to make sure you come out the same. So you may count them first, or you might tally everything, and then you'll count them. And then you'll say, yeah, where are they? Goof up, which happens. But you... normally on a pasture deal, where you're going to have mix, because a lot of times if you just got calves, the only thing you're going to have is steers or heifers. So what you might do there is, if you've got a mixed bunch of steers and heifers, you might say balance steers, and you've already counted them, you already know how many's there, so that the only thing you have to tally is the heifers. Every heifer that goes by, and your odds of making a mistake when you're only tallying one sex are pretty slim. It has happened, and you might be off one or two. Your total count is still the same. You check them by, and you make your hash mark for the animal. So if you, an animal comes up that you can't read the brand on, or for some reason or another it looks different, you rope that animal and clip it. We all carry a set of hand clippers, two or three sets. Rope the animal, tie them to the fence, and clip the area, clip all the hair off that area. And
take a good look.
Take a good look, yeah. And you pick out strays, because maybe the neighbor across the fence, his brand's on the same side, but calves have a habit of being real fuzzy, and a lot of times you can tell a brand is there, or that there is a brand there, but you just don't know for certain, is it the guy's brand who you're inspecting for, or is it the neighbor's or somebody else's, or whatever the case may be. So you tie them to the fence. After you work them that way, then you have to write out your inspection, your paperwork, list the owner and where they're going and where they were inspected at, and you list the number of steers, number of heifers. And if there's a change of ownership, you know it on there. Bill of sale was taken up, because you have to pick up a bill of sale, and the bill of sale is put on file in Helena, office.
And you do that paperwork right there.
Right there. Okay. Because the truck that's going to haul these things has to have a copy of that. It has to be in their possession when they go across the country.
Right.
Failure to have that piece of paper in the truck is the same as not having them inspected at all. So that when they stop that truck wherever, you know, because our men, plus the sheriff's office and the highway patrol, have full authority at any time to stop any truck going down the road hauling livestock and check their paperwork. Don't have to have any particular reason. They don't have to have a light out or anything else. The fact is that they're on the road and they're hauling livestock, gives them authority to stop and check their paperwork. By the same token, it helps where if a truck gets involved in, say maybe this truck was going to Bridgeport, Nebraska, and he gets down in Wyoming and there's a truck wreck. Animals get scattered. Some of them get killed, some of them get loose, whatever. One of the first people they call, other than the highway patrol, if there's livestock involved, is brand inspector in that area. Well, the trucker can say, here's the brands that's on them, so that when they start gathering these things up, they know what they're looking for. And there's times when, we'll say this happened early in the fall, that maybe later on in the fall they're working another rancher's cattle in the area, and here one of these animals show up, because there's times when they don't get them all gathered. And they know who the owner is then. They're aware of this truck wreck. Know where it belongs.
Yeah.
And it's a pretty tight system, actually. And contrary, I've got to say this, and contrary to popular belief, and I believe you're the one, this, all of this brand inspection and everything did not start without West. They had brand inspectors in the colonial days in New England. They had guys that were assigned to watch the roads and note the brands on any cattle moving up and down the road. See, it's nothing new.
An inspector working, say, 110 calves going into a semi, how long would something like that take?
If they're well branded and it's a good day and it isn't sloppy and everything like that, 45 minutes.
Hmm. And you're not clipping many.
Yeah. You know, if they're well branded and, like I say, you got a good day, 45 minutes you should have them looked at and the paperwork wrote up.
That's quick.
What have we got next year on there? How appointed getting in. Did you want to just kind of go down there?
Sure.
Did you have any other,
no,
you know, in the interest of keeping this thing more interesting, if you got some other questions you want to throw in here?
No, I get interested in certain stuff, so I forget what I'm doing.
So we don't bore and plumb to death. brand changing. This is... I would say it's on, well, it's not on its way out. You're always going to have somebody that's going to try it. One of the things that, now this is my own estimation, of course Montana does not recognize freeze branding. You ever study anything on freeze branding?
Yeah.
Okay, where they use a extremely cold iron and it changes the pigment of the hair. This shouldn't be for publication. Because, man, if a guy wanted to be crooked, he's really missing the boat if he doesn't move in next to somebody that does nothing but freeze brand. Because you can... I'm a firm believer that you could get the right bottle of Clairol or a little shoe polish and you could cover up anything to get them out of the country, out of the brand area. Because once you get east of the Mississippi, actually east of the Missouri in North Dakota and South Dakota, and you're out of any brand area as far as brand inspection requirements and so on and so forth. And once you get them back there, who cares if the brand shows up again? Because we haven't run across anybody doing that yet. Or I should say, to the best of my knowledge, they haven't caught anybody. We have, as far as brand changing, the Bruce Johnson case was the last big case as far as really changing. Although I hear that they just broke a case down in Madison County here this last week. And I don't know all the particulars on it, and I didn't try to quiz anybody. You know, all I know is they've got a man arrested for theft, charged with wrestling. And exactly all the fine points of it, I don't know. The big thing is to try to steal no brands. It's the safest. We did have, a few years ago, we had a case up north where a guy put his brand over the top of another brand, hoping that it would cover it up enough so they wouldn't recognize or see that there was another brand underneath of it. But he got caught up on that. You know, if he'd have taken his time, you know, the old timers, the real pros at brand altering and would watch, and they would, you know, they wouldn't just go out and gather up a bunch of cattle and change the brands on all of them. The brand had to be put on this animal a little bit sloppy. They picked and chose which animals that they were going to work on. And so that when they got done, most of the time without actually shooting the animal and skinning it out, you'd have had a heck of an argument whether it was just a sloppy job of branding or did he actually try to cover something up. There would have been a real argument over a lot of them. And same way with just the normal alterations. They would pick on particular ones that maybe the brand, when they put it on the animal, it had to be tilted just a certain way instead of straight up and down. They were real pros. And today you notice that even when ranchers are just branding their cattle. The only thing they can think of is, let's get this thing done and go get a beer, you know. And so, actually, in some instances, there's probably a lot of sloppy brands out there. If the crook himself was willing to take the time to watch for a particular animal, you know, so that the brand was just right, he could change it. But crooks nowadays don't have the patience for that. No finesse.
Yeah, everything's gone to hell.
Yeah. We did have one case a number of years, well, this would have been early 80s. Then here again, it involved no brand cattle, but these cattle had ear tags because they had been tested for brucellosis, they had been tested for TB, so they had these metal ear tags in their ears. It was a bunch of dairy cattle, and they wound up on a dairy farm in Wisconsin. We got them back. But it was a case of a crook making himself a little too obvious. So he when the cattle showed up missing, he was immediately a suspect. The only thing he had to figure out then is where would he go with them? Because you'd have to find the animals to tie the case together. So you just started investigating as who his contacts were and where he traveled in the last 6 weeks. And
who his trucker was.
Yeah. Yep. How appointed, they are inspectors and, well, they call them a stock inspector and detective. When they graded all of the employees for the state, they got filed under investigators. But from day one, they've always been commissioned as stock inspectors and detectives. And that's our current commission is stock inspector. They're appointed by the Board of Livestock upon recommendation of supervisors down below. Yeah, this guy's got it. And they serve at the pleasure of the board.
You don't have to build in job security and all that.
You serve at the pleasure of the board. And the state agency that regulates stock inspectors, it's, well, now we have the Department of Livestock, but which was formed in, what, 72? Is that when they had the big reorganization? Before that, it was the Livestock Commission. And prior to it became Livestock Commission in 1917. And before that, it was the State Board of Stock Commissioners. And prior to that, it was the Territorial Board of Stock Commissioners. First stock inspectors were appointed in April of 1885. And we had, from that day on, we've had full law enforcement authority statewide. We've had detectives stationed in other places, St. Paul, Minnesota, Chicago, Sioux City, Grand Island, Nebraska, Denver, Colorado, Idaho Falls, Spokane, Washington. Pretty widespread. And how, even though these guys were out of state, we usually had reciprocal agreements. Like I've got a copy of the commission for our guy in St. Paul. And what they do is they go to the sheriff of that county, and then they would get commissioned as a deputy sheriff in that county. And they would actually serve part-time, although their wages and everything was paid by the Livestock Commission. But that gave them the law enforcement authority they needed at these places. if our badge wasn't good enough, they'd back it up with another one. And a number of our inspectors were, well, I think to this day there's still one, I think. I thought I was one of the last ones, but well, we've got one other one today that I think is still packing up. He's got a badge from the department, plus he's got a county badge.
Hmm.
Which works out all right. But that was very common in the early days, that they would also be packing a badge for the county. To the sheriffs, it was like having an extra deputy without the extra cost.
It should be used for other things.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and now the job, I'm assuming what you meant by graded here is, does it fall under the state pay plan? Yeah, it is graded. I don't know what the wages on the district investigators now are. I believe they're a grade, they're either a grade 13 or grade 14. They were 13 for a long time, and they were talking about trying to get that upgraded to a 14. I don't know if they got it done or not. Beginning pay, well, when I started, it was $365 a month, paid once a month, whether you needed it or not.
In the 60s?
Yep, and out of that 365, I think I cleared 207. Yeah, that was in 66. I thought, God, at that time, if I ever got to where I made 10,000 bucks a year, I'd have more money than I could ever spend.
That's where you had kids, huh?
Yeah. Now, this after 10 years... a lot of that is because the beginning pay now, a district man does not start out in a district. He starts out working in the markets.
Hmm.
You work your way through, and if you look promising, they will send you to the law enforcement academy. Things like that, and they'll watch you. And they usually try to keep three or four guys out here. We've got a number of them that have been to the academy, but they are not in a law enforcement position. But these are guys that if we get somebody that retires or gets killed in a car wreck or something, they've got a pool that they can draw on. And what they'll go back is they'll reevaluate every one of these guys. And then they'll pick the one that they think will do the job. Put him in a position, and then he is on probation for a minimum of a year now.
It's kind of like a minor league baseball system.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you work your way.
You work your way up. Until that system kind of came into being in the late 50s. Prior to that, there was no real movement from... If you were a brand inspector in the yards, you pretty much stayed there. What they used, of course, they had a lot fewer law enforcement positions at that time. Now, they've got a total of like 20 throughout the state. When I first started, there were 8 to cover the entire state. You know, so there wasn't a big turnover, you know. That's why they figured, you know, well, when I was commissioned full-time and I only had like 4 years in, I was kind of the hotshot kid on the block. And there was actually a fair amount of resentment from some of the old heads over it. But here I was only 4 years and I was drawing the same pay they were. And they had 25 years in. And I can understand. It's changing. So after 10 years, it would depend on what job you were holding, where you were. The guy that replaced me in my position here in Helena He had like 17 years in the state before he got a law enforcement position. So, depends on where you're at. Perks to the job. Well, in the early days, the early 70s, well, can't say early days, but in the early 70s, we used to have to furnish our own vehicle. The department furnished the red light and the siren and the radio, but you furnished the wheels. In the 70s, they finally got their act together, and the department started furnishing vehicles and equipping them, updating, which is pretty good. You just get a state meal allowance and the exempt license plates because of the state vehicles. So, yeah, I guess we just answered that one. Our own vehicles are state vehicles. Multiple county districts. Normal work routes.
How many inspectors are working in a yard like Billings?
Billings right now, they've got two yards there, and they will switch help back and forth because of alternating sale dates and stuff like that. They've probably got 10 or 12 guys working in Billings. But you figure Billings, I have no idea what they're running now. When I was working down there, between them two yards, we'd run a quarter of a million cattle. So, take 10 or 12 guys. Okay, apprentice or veteran stock inspectors, yeah, you do have that. There's no formal classes as far as how to recognize blotted brands. This is one of the reasons you work in the yards. You learn to recognize things. When you spend 5 days a week looking at cattle coming down the alley, you eventually learn it, if you're gonna.
But then the value of these guys...